Vladimir saw her on the North Monitor. Nothing recognizable, just a brief flare that, because of the phosphor technology, was smeared and a little time-lagged. But he bent his head closer anyway and stared at the afterimage. 1 second. Two. Sokolov sensed the interruption to his rhythm and glanced over. 3 seconds. Four.
Fox? Vladimir said. I didn't see it, Sokolov said. But probably.
It ran away again.
Okay, then.
Sokolov turned back to his own pair of monitors, glanced at the west view, checked the south, and settled into his regular cadence again. Cash had a cadence of his own. He was inching his night scope along at what he guessed was the speed of a walking man, but every 5 seconds he would sweep it suddenly forward and back in case his estimate was off. During one of those rapid traverses, he picked up on what looked like a pale green shadow.
Reacher, I can see you. You're visible, soldier.
Reacher's voice came back.
What scope have you got on that thing?
Litton.
Expensive, right?
$3,700.
Got to be better than a lousy thermal camera.
Cash didn't reply. Reacher said,
I'm hoping so, anyway.
He walked on. Probably the most unnatural thing a human can force himself to do. To walk slowly and surely toward a building that likely has a rifle in it pointing directly at his center mass. If Chenko had any sense at all, he would wait and wait and wait until his target was pretty close. And Chenko seemed to have plenty of sense. 50 yards would be good. Or 35, like Chenko's range out of the parking garage. Chenko was pretty good at 35 yards. That had been made very clear. He walked on, took the knife out of his pocket and unsheathed it, and held it right-handed, low and easy. Transferred the phone to his left and held it near his ear. Heard Cash say,
You're totally visible now, soldier. You're shining like the North Star. It's like you're on fire.
40 yards to go. 39. 38.
Helen, do it again.
He heard her voice.
Okay.
He walked on, held his breath. 35 yards. 34, 33. He breathed out. He walked on, doggedly. 29 yards to go. He heard panting in his ear. Helen, running. He heard Yanni ask off mic,
How close is he?
Heard Cash answer,
Not close enough.
Vladimir leaned forward and said, There it is again. He put his fingertip on the screen as if touch might tell him something. Sokolov glanced across. Sokolov had spent many more hours with the screens than Vladimir. Primarily, surveillance had been his job, his and Braskin's.
That's no fox, he said. It's way too big.
He watched for 5 more seconds. The image was weaving left and right at the very limit of the camera's range. Recognizable size, recognizable shape, inexplicable motion. He stood up and walked to the door, braced his hands on the frame and leaned out into the hallway.
Chenko!
He called.
North!
Behind his back on the west screen, a shape as big as his thumb grew larger. It looked like a painting by numbers figure done in fluorescent colors, lime green on the outside, then a band of chrome yellow with a core of hot red. Chenko walked through an empty bedroom and opened the window as high as it would go. Then he backed away into the darkness. That way, he was invisible from below and invulnerable except to a shot taken from the third story of an adjacent building. And there were no adjacent buildings. He switched on his night scope and raised his rifle, quartered the open ground 200 yards out, up and down, left and right. He saw a woman. She was running crazily, barefoot, darting left and right, out and back like she was dancing or playing a phantom game of soccer. Chenko thought, What? He squeezed the slack out of his trigger and tried to anticipate her next pirouette. Tried to guess where her chest would be a third of a second after he fired. He waited. Then she stopped moving. She stood completely still, facing the house, arms out wide like a target. Chenko pulled the trigger. Then he understood. He stepped back to the hallway.
Decoy! He screamed. Decoy!
Cash saw the muzzle flash and called,
Shot fired!
And jumped his scope to the north window. The lower pane was raised, the upper pane was fixed. No point in putting a round through the opening. The upward trajectory would guarantee a miss. So he fired at the glass. He figured if he could get a hail of jagged shards going, then that might ruin somebody's night. Sokolov was watching the crazy heat image on Vladimir's screen when he heard Chenko's shot and his shouted warning. He glanced back at the door and turned to the south monitor. Nothing there. Then he heard return fire and shattering glass upstairs. He pushed back from the table and stepped to the door.
Are you okay?
He called. Decoy! Chenko called back. Has to be! Sokolov turned and checked all four screens very carefully.
No, he called. Negative. Definitely nothing incoming.
Reacher touched the front wall of the house. Old plank siding, painted many times. He was 10 feet south of the driveway, 10 feet south of the front door, near a window that looked into a dark, empty room. The window was a tall rectangle with a lower pane that slid upward behind the upper pane. Maybe the upper pane slid down over the lower pane, too. Reacher didn't know the name for the style. He had rarely lived in houses, and had never owned one. Sash? Double hung? He wasn't sure. The house was much older than it had looked from a distance, maybe 100 years. 100-year-old house, 100-year-old window. But did the window still have a 100-year-old catch? He pressed his cheek against the lower pane and squinted upward. He couldn't see. Too dark. Then he heard the shooting. 2 rounds, one close, one not, shattering glass. Then he heard Cash in his ear.
Helen, you okay?
He heard no reply. Cash asked again.
Helen? Helen?
No reply. Reacher put the phone in his pocket, worked the blade of his knife up into the gap where the bottom of the upper casement overlapped the top of the lower casement. He moved the blade right to left, slowly, carefully, feeling for a catch. He found one, dead center. Tapped it gently. It felt like a heavy brass tongue. It would pivot through 90 degrees, in and out of a socket. But which way? He pushed it, right to left. Solid. He pulled the knife out and worked it back in, an inch left of center. Slid it back until he found the tongue again. Pushed it, left to right. It moved. He pushed it hard, and knocked it right out of its socket. Easy. He lifted the lower pane high, and rolled over the sill, into the room. Cash eased forward and swung his rifle through 90 degrees until it was sighted due east along the fence. He stared through the scope, saw nothing. He moved back into cover, raised his phone.
Helen,
he whispered. No response. Reacher moved through the empty room to the door. It was closed. He put his ear against it, listened hard. Heard nothing. He turned the handle slowly, carefully, opened the door very slowly, leaned out, checked the hallway. Empty. There was light from an open doorway 15 feet ahead on his left. He paused, lifted 1 foot at a time and wiped the soles of his shoes on his pants, wiped his palms. He took a single step, tested the floor. No sound. He moved ahead, slowly, silently. Boat shoes. Good for something. He kept close to the wall where the floor would be strongest. He stopped a yard shy of the lighted doorway, took a breath, moved on. Stopped in the doorway. He was looking at 2 guys from behind. They were seated side by side with their backs to him at a long table, staring at TV monitors, at ghostly green images of darkness. On the left, Vladimir. On the right, a guy he hadn't seen before. Sokolov? Must be. To Sokolov's right, a yard away from him, a handgun rested on the very end of the table. A Smith & Wesson Model 60, the first stainless steel revolver produced anywhere in the world. 2.5-inch barrel, a 5-shooter. Reacher took a long, silent step into the room, paused, held his breath, reversed the knife in his hand, held the blade 1 inch from its end between the ball of his thumb and the knuckle of his first finger, raised his arm, cocked it behind his head, snapped it forward, threw the knife. It buried itself 2 inches deep in the back of Sokolov's neck. Vladimir glanced right toward the sound. Reacher was already moving. Vladimir glanced back, saw him, pushed himself away from the table and half rose. Reacher watched him calculate the distance between himself and the gun, saw him decide to go for it, Reacher stepped into his charge and ducked under his swinging left hook and buried his shoulder in his chest and wrapped both arms around his back and jacked him bodily off his feet, just lifted him up and turned him away from the table, and then squeezed. Best route to a silent kill against a guy as big as Vladimir was simply to crush him to death. No hitting, no shooting, no banging around. As long as his arms and his legs couldn't connect with anything solid, there would be no noise, no shouting, no screaming. Just a long, labored, barely audible tubercular sound as the last breath he had taken came back out, never to be replaced. Reacher held Vladimir a foot off the ground and squeezed with all his strength. He crushed Vladimir's chest in a bear hug so vicious and sustained and powerful that no human could have survived it. Vladimir wasn't expecting it. He thought this was some kind of a preamble, not the main event. When he figured it out, he went crazy with panic. He rained desperate blows down on Reacher's back and flailed with his feet at his shins. Stupid, Reacher thought. You're just burning oxygen, and you ain't getting more, pal. Better believe it. He tightened his grip, crushed harder and harder and then harder in a remorseless, subliminal rhythm that said more and more and more. His teeth ground together, his heart pounded, his muscles swelled as big and hard as river rocks and started burning. He could feel Vladimir's ribcage moving, clicking, separating, cracking, crushing, and his last living breath leaking out of his starving lungs. Sokolov moved. Reacher staggered under Vladimir's weight, turned clumsily on one leg, kicked out and caught the hilt of the knife with his heel. Sokolov stopped moving. Vladimir stopped moving. Reacher kept the pressure full on for another whole minute. Then he eased off slowly and bent down and laid the body gently on the floor, squatted down, breathed hard, checked for a pulse. No pulse. He stood up and pulled Cash's knife out of Sokolov's neck and used it to cut Vladimir's throat, ear to ear. For Sandy, he thought. Then he turned back and cut Sokolov's throat too, just in case. Blood soaked the tabletop and dripped to the floor. It didn't spurt. It just leaked. Sokolov's heart had already stopped pumping. He squatted down again and cleaned the blade on Vladimir's shirt, one side, then the other. He pulled the phone out of his pocket, heard Cash say,
"Helen!"
He whispered, "What's up?" Cash answered,
"We took an incoming round. I can't raise Helen."
"Yanni, move left," Reacher said. "Find her. Franklin, you there?" Franklin said,
"Here."
"Stand by to call the medics." Cash asked,
"Where are you?"
"In the house."
"Opposition?"
"Unsuccessful. Where did the shot come from?"
"Third floor window north, which makes sense tactically. They've got the sniper up there. They can direct him based on what they see from the cameras."
"Not anymore," Reacher said. He dropped the phone back in his pocket, picked up the gun, checked the cylinder. It was fully loaded. 5 Smith & Wesson 38 specials. He moved out to the hallway with the knife in his right hand and the gun in his left, went looking for the basement door. Cash heard Yanni talking to herself as she moved away to his left. Low voice, but clear, like a running commentary. She was saying,
"I'm moving east now, keeping low, staying tight against the fence in the darkness. I'm looking for Helen Roden. We know they fired at her. Now she's not answering her phone. We're hoping she's okay, but we're worried that she isn't."
Cash listened until he couldn't hear her anymore. He shook his head in bemusement. Then he ducked his eye to the scope and watched the house. Rosemary Barr wasn't in the basement. It took Reacher less than a minute to be completely certain of that. It was a wide open space, musty, dimly lit, uninterrupted and totally empty except for the foundations of 3 brick chimneys. Reacher paused at the circuit breaker box. He was tempted to throw the switch, but Chenko had a night sight and he didn't, so he just crept back up the stairs. Yanni found Helen Roden's shoes literally by stumbling over them. They were placed neatly, side by side, at the base of the fence. High heels, black patent, gleaming slightly in the ragged moonlight. Yanni kicked them accidentally and heard the sound of empty footwear. She bent and picked them up, hung them on the fence by their heels.
"Helen!"
she whispered.
Helen, where are you?
Then she heard a voice.
Here.
Where?
Here. Keep going.
Yanni walked down, found a black shape rolled tight against the base of the fence.
I dropped my phone. Can't find it.
Are you okay?
He missed me. I was leaping around like a madwoman, but the bullet came real close. It scared me. I just dropped my phone and ran.
Helen sat up. Yanni squatted next to her.
Look,
Helen said. She was holding something in the palm of her hand, something bright, a coin, a quarter, new and shiny.
What is it? A quarter,
Helen said.
So what? Preacher gave it to me.
Helen was smiling. Yanni could see the white of her teeth in the moonlight.